Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with your hosts, Drs. Francine Foss, Anish Chagpar, and Stephen Gore. Dr. Foss is a professor of medicine in the section of medical oncology at the Yale Cancer Center. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the breast center at Smilo Cancer Hospital. And Dr. Gore is director of hematological malignancies at Smilo. Yale Cancer Center Answers features weekly conversations about the research, diagnosis, and treatment of cancer. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can submit questions and comments to canceranswers@yale.edu, or you can leave a voicemail message at 888-234-4YCC. This week, you'll hear a conversation about lymphoma with survivor Greg Walsh. Here's Dr. Stephen Gore.
Can you tell us a little bit about your story, what kind of cancer you had when you were diagnosed and how you found out about it?
Sure. It was lymphoma. It was B-cell lymphoma. It was 2008. I had just begun my second year teaching in Bridgeport, my second year of my teaching career. And the summer before, I had, well, 2 years before that, I had bought a rental property. So I was working all summer on that. And I think in June, I started experiencing lower back pain and sciatica symptoms. And in my early days, in my early years, I had recovered from something called reflex sympathetic disorder. And I had been through a whole process of surgery and all these other treatments. And the only thing that worked was a mind-body technique that I had learned. It was the mind-body connection idea, and I cured myself of that the pain disorder. So when this happened, I thought it was the same thing coming back. So the whole summer, I practiced my psychological techniques on this this pain that was progressively getting worse. I had all the classic symptoms of lymphoma, although I didn't know what they were at the time. The swollen ankles and loss of energy and all those things. And somewhat foolishly, looking back on it, just delayed and delayed and delayed until I finally went to see my doctor, and he pretty much knew what it was right away.
Really?
Yeah, he had a good sense. He was very gentle. He didn't want to make any calls right then in terms of what it was, but he said, you know, this could be serious. So one thing led to another. I went to Bridgeport Hospital initially, and they suspected that it was lymphoma. Scans were done. And I got the call. I believe it was in October, early October that year, from the doctor over there. And the first thing he said is that it was a quote-unquote good cancer to have, because prognosis was usually pretty good, even if you were at a high stage of diagnosis. So that was a relief, and you know, we went from there. A couple different doctors, and then I ended up at Yale Cancer Hospital at the time, now Smilo.
Mm-hmm. And did you have to have a biopsy of a tumor somewhere?
I did. They did. They took bone marrow out. It was at the base of my spine. It was hard to get into that area without disrupting nerves. They did do a biopsy, as I remember, and it took a long time to identify, and that was kind of that was challenging to deal with. And they finally identified it, nailed it down to the particular type of lymphoma. And at that point, I was getting ready for treatment, and really ready to ready for the challenge. I was very gung ho in the beginning. I was very I thought I had a great fighting attitude at the start. That didn't last forever, but it came back later on in my treatment, which was good.
How old were you at the time?
I was a very active 38-year-old. Yeah,
got it. And so, what was the treatment like? How were you treated, and what did that constitute?
Well, because the location of the tumor was at the base of my spine, and it was. There was a potential for it to enter the spinal canal, the cerebral spinal fluid, I didn't know anything about lymphoma at the time, that it was the sort of cancer that could spread, and so they were concerned, very much concerned about that, that there would be some kind of infiltration into the brain. So they were very aggressive. It was a very dose dense treatment. I took off I think I left work. The last day was just before Thanksgiving, and I didn't come back until June. So, you know, I responded very well to the chemotherapy. And so after the first scan came clean, after the first scan showed that, there was no longer any cancer cells alive, I was very much encouraged. But, you know, as a cancer patient, you know that there's you're going to go through the course, and there's two or three or four more treatments to go. I think they were every scheduled for every 2 weeks, but a couple were delayed, so averaged every 2 to 3 weeks. And I think I finished treatment around January, and then I went for radiation a few months later.
And the radiation was to that original area of the tumor?
Yes, very localized, the pelvic area.
Mm-hmm. So you said that there was a time when your gung-ho fighting self was getting a little tired. What was that like? When did that happen?
I approached the whole idea of being treated for cancer with equal parts fear and positive attitude. It was a little strange, I guess. I think I was more afraid of the treatment than the cancer itself. As I said, I was a very active 38-year-old. I didn't know really what I was going to be like physically after treatment. I didn't have a sense for that, and I was really concerned about, you know, coming out of treatment. So I was going to do everything I could on my end. I consulted with a Chinese medicine specialist, and she put me on a diet to support me through chemotherapy. And so I was really, I had a great attitude. I think I was going to do everything I could. I was not just going to rely on the treatment. I was positive. And then just prior to the first chemotherapy treatment, the latest scan, they had scanned my entire upper body, and it came through, and the results came in right while I was in the waiting room ready for treatment. And it turned out the cancer had spread, and I hadn't accounted for that possibility.
That was before you started treatment.
It was the day of treatment, yeah. Yeah, and nobody knew that at the time. I had been scanned a couple of times, I believe, went through the biopsies. None of that was known. So the idea that the cancer could spread was a new thing, and it pretty much crashed my attitude. I was terrified. I'm not afraid to admit that I was terrified by that. And it became very real that this was a life or death situation potentially. And that really changed for a while. I realized that this wasn't going to be just me. This was going to be relying on other people to save my life, potentially. And all of a sudden, the relationships in my life became very, very important, much more than I realized before. Because when you realize it's not just you, you have to rely on other people. And thankfully, I have an incredible family. My work family was just incredibly supportive. They donated personal days. I didn't have enough personal days to take the time off. So Bridgeport City Teachers donated about 60 personal days. My students sent me, I have piles of letters. They made videos. My parents and my brothers and sisters, there was at least one person at every doctor's visit. I think the first doctor's visit, they didn't have enough chairs in the doctor's office. They had to bring in more. That sort of thing. And that really affects you on multiple levels, especially someone like me, because I'm always been very much of an individualist, do my own thing. To realize that all those people in your life, you know, show up at your doorstep the moment you need them, and that was a big change for me to rely on the people, my support system.
Yeah, that's great. And how rough was the chemotherapy for you? How difficult was the treatment?
You know, 5 years later, it's hard to remember exactly, to be accurate. I almost think that it wasn't that bad. It certainly wasn't as bad as I feared it would be. My energy level never got that low. You know, I lost the hair on top of my head, but I was never nauseous, and I ate really well, supported myself, and I don't think it was that trying of an ordeal. And the same went for the radiation. It wasn't that bad.
And you seem to have liked the bald look so much that you've maintained it. For the studio audience, Greg has shaved his head.
Yeah, and I get a lot of comments now from my students. You look good, Mr. Walsh, but you need to grow your hair back. Actually, one of the things I did was I joined a support group. Dr. Bernie Siegel runs a support group. And one thing, a page I took out of his book was that he shaved his head as a reminder of the importance of the work he does. And so I kind of did the same thing as a reminder to take care of myself, because it's very easy to get unbalanced and to work harder than you really need to and to forget about taking care of yourself in terms of your health. And it's a constant reminder to take care of me so I don't end up in the same position again.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I heard Dr. Siegel talk when I was a medical student here, which is quite a long time ago. And I got a lot of jewels or pearls out of that talk. But the most important thing to me was, at that time, this is really in around 1980 or so, I wasn't using my seatbelt regularly. and Dr. Siegel started out his talk with a bunch of students and nurses and doctors and asked us how many people want to live. And everyone raised their hand. He says, well, how many of you always wear your seatbelt? And everyone's hand went down. And he says, you know, I've got these patients who are struggling, exceptional patients who are surviving cancer, and they've got real problems. And you've got something you can do to just save your life every day, and you're not doing it. And that was just profound for me. But he also talked about the shaving of the head and why he does that. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and attending those meetings, the support group meetings, there was a lot of what you just described. He really brings things down to a very concrete level. He's very pointed. And, you know, he doesn't sugarcoat anything. You know, this is real life. This is real life and death. And he'll ask you certain questions that make you question, well, you know, where am I at in this decision, whatever that decision may be? Where am I at in my treatment? What am I doing? The thing that I remember most from those meetings is, you know, I was struggling with fear, and he knew it. And he said, well, can you look beyond the fear and ask yourself very simply, what is your potential? And I really thought of that. Really hit me hard. I thought about that. Well, you know, assuming I'm going to come out of this, what is my potential? What am I going to do with this? At the other end, what's your potential as a human being? And that's really stuck with me. It's made me become a better teacher, a better family member, and just to live life like there's no tomorrow, you know, every single day, be as present as possible.
How long were you in the support group for?
I think it was that about 5 or 6 months during treatment.
Gotcha. So we're going to want to speak more about the support group and your experience with your treatment and what's happened since then. But right now, we're going to take a short break for Medical Minute. Please stay tuned to learn more about Greg Walsh's journey through the treatment of lymphoma.
It is estimated that over 200,000 men in the United States will be diagnosed with prostate cancer this year, with almost 3,000 of these diagnoses here in Connecticut. 1 in 6 American men will develop prostate cancer in the course of his lifetime. Major advances in the detection and treatment of prostate cancer have dramatically decreased the number of men who die from this disease. Screening for prostate cancer can be performed quickly and easily in a physician's office using 2 simple tests, a physical exam and a blood test. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as Yale Cancer Center, and at Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven, to test innovative new treatments for prostate cancer. The Artemis machine is a new technology being used at Smilo that enables targeted biopsies to be performed, as opposed to removing multiple cores from the prostate for examination, which may not be necessary. This has been a Medical Minute brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center and Smilo Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Stephen Gore, and we have a special guest tonight, Greg Walsh, who is a survivor of lymphoma. Greg, before the break, you were telling us about your experience with this, what sounds like a very wonderful support group run by Dr. Bernie Siegel, who many people will know of as the surgeon who's written things like Love, Medicine, and Miracles, and is very interested, I guess, in the mind-body connection and people's ability to take some control over their cancer. Is that?
Yeah, and in fact, I read that book years before, so it's familiar. And luckily, Dr. Siegel lives here in the state, and his support group was only about a half an hour from where I live. So showing up on a Tuesday night was very easy. And I think that it really opened my eyes to a lot of things. There's this whole other spiritual side to what we go through, going through cancer treatment. And it's an opportunity for learning where you are along life's path as well. And to access, you know, Bernie Siegel talks a lot about the unconscious mind and, you know, and trying to use your understanding of where you are at on different levels to support your journey through treatment. So he talked a lot about meditation. There was a meditation every meeting, and I used meditation throughout my treatment as well, for anxiety and also to think about my connection with everything around me. You know, what's my place here? What does all of this mean? One of the things that Bernie Siegel said to me at some point, I don't remember exactly when in the course of treatment, it was a time where I was pretty low. He just said, he looked me right in the eye and he said, ask yourself what your potential is. And he let it go at that. And that hung with me. And I thought, well, you know, there's a good chance I'm going to make it through this. And what is my potential? Who am I? What am I doing with my life? And how can I be of service to others? And I think going forward through treatment, it made me a much better teacher. It made me care a lot more about my students and the people around me and their experience within my classroom. It made me care a lot more about my family, the people I'm close to. I spend a lot more time now than I did then with my family and friends. You know, what your potential is can mean any number of things.
Well, it sounds like in some ways, not that anybody ever wants to have cancer, it sounds like it had played a very important part in kind of self-actualization or moving you to the next level as a person. I'm getting that it wasn't completely a negative experience in some ways.
It forces you to look into the mirror and ask a lot of questions. And absolutely, I couldn't agree more. Maybe not self-actualization yet. I'm only 43, but hopefully I'm on the road. But it makes you look at how you're spending your time, how you're taking care of yourself. That was a big change for me. I was pretty healthy other than having lymphoma prior to that.
Oh, there's that.
Yeah, there was that. But I wasn't really putting the effort I felt I needed to into diet and exercise. And all of that changed afterwards because, it forces you to look and see, well, you know, it's impossible to say why this happened exactly biologically. But, you know, what are the things that I can do to put me in that segment of the population that doesn't get as sick or doesn't have to go through this again? And I was very much willing to do all those things and continue to do those things now. It does. It definitely wakes you up in a lot of ways.
So I'm interested in the lifestyle changes that you made at this point, what's 5 or 6 years later, do you feel like you're maintaining those lifestyle changes because they've just become the norm for you? Or is it really a conscious way in the same way that shaving your head reminds you of cancer, of your experience with cancer? How's that working for you, these changes then, and that you're sustaining them, which I think is unusual?
Yeah, I think it's easy to slip. We live very busy lives in our culture, and it's hard to make that time to stay focused on that. I'm not perfect, but I do spend a lot of time. I follow a macrobiotic diet, which is a lot of grains and vegetables, plenty of protein too, but it's a lot of work to prepare it. I spend a lot of time in the kitchen, and I get a lot of exercise. I'm much more active than I was, even though I was fairly active before. I do a lot of running and hiking, a lot of cardio exercise, and that part, the exercise, is easy because, you know, it's very enjoyable, and I know I'm missing it when I haven't done it for a few days. So that's a constant reminder. The food, it's like I said, it's easy to slip, but in the back of my mind is always that, you know, that's very important. And again, actually, if I go off of my diet for too long, I notice I don't feel as well. Hmm. And I think that after going through something like recovery from cancer, I'm much more attuned to that feeling of I'm not feeling as well, much more than before. So as soon as I get that feeling, there's kind of a switch that goes off in my head and tells me to get back on track. So it's much more of a norm than it was before. It was I'm much more conscious of my diet than I was prior to starting macrobiotics. So it is a norm, but it's easy to slip too.
Yeah. What was it like, sort of re-entering the world once you were done with your treatment, coming back to school? And tell us about that.
I noticed there were some symptoms physically. The first thing that comes to mind is the physical symptoms. My eyesight was a little blurry. I was a little shaky. My balance was a little shaky. Teaching physical science is very active. It's a very active job. I'm rarely behind my desk. There's a lot of physical experiments the kids do with forces in motion and that sort of thing. So if I'm teaching forces in motion as a teacher and I'm off balance physically, it can be a little embarrassing. But I noticed that. So I was not feeling like my normal sense. I did have a little lack of energy, but it didn't take long for that to come back, and my sense of balance came back really quickly. I did notice that people treated me differently, not in a bad way at all, but they were more attentive to me, you know, how are you doing? And that question that all cancer survivors, you know, get, you know, when was your last scan? Are some of the questions, or are you doing okay? And it's not just a how are you doing today, are you doing okay? It's a how are you doing, you know, are you doing all right in terms of your recovery without saying it? And of course, none of that bothered me. Again, my work environment, the people there were super supportive all the way through and still are. There's a little bit, you are treated a little bit differently, I suppose. But as time has gone on, a lot of that kind of melts away. And I don't feel that much different than I did, I think, before in terms of re-entering the world. You feel like you have an obligation, at least I did, to teach health, even though it's not part of my curriculum. And not just with my students, the people, you know, I talk about my diet a lot. I'm asked a lot because I bring very strange food to school. And, you know, what is that, Mr. Walsh? What are you eating? That's very strange. You know, why do you do that? And I always have the discussion. I'm very upfront with my students, even those that were in second or third grade when I was out of school for treatment. I think it's very important for them to learn about health. So you do feel an obligation to share what you've learned about living a healthy lifestyle.
Do you worry about your cancer coming back?
You know, not on a regular basis. I don't worry too much. It's been 5 years, and 5 years is a pretty good milestone for that. But I don't. I mean, with the things that I do to take care of myself, in my back pocket, I think there's more of a barrier between me and that coming back. But you never know. You know, anything can happen. So. No, to answer your question, I don't worry much about the cancer coming back. And the other thing about that, too, is the worry in going through this process, practicing living, you know, in the present moment. I don't want to spend any time worrying. So that's another switch that goes off. As soon as I get into that worrying, if I do, I remember what I learned from Bernie Siegel and all the other things that I read, is that, you know, it's your right not to live in that space of fear. It's your right to soak up everything that's around you every single day, every single moment. And that's not something that comes easily for anybody. Cancer certainly propels it. And I'm very grateful for having that outlook and that ability to kind of come back to right now and just enjoy it because, you know, again, you don't know how long you have. Bernie Siegel, another great thing that he said was, you know, some people have, their lives are like a long, tall candle and some are like a really short one. And you have no idea what it's going to be like. So, you know, you might as well just be here now.
You were mentioning to me before we started that you had been involved with some survivorship groups.
Yeah, Yale had a lot of great programs for people going through treatment, from yoga to meditation, exercise classes. So I took advantage of every single one I could and met some wonderful people through them. They're very, very helpful. I found that everything about my treatment and my experience at Yale was... it was just a very warm environment all the way through. I'm grateful. I actually credit my brother because initially, he got on the internet and found out who the top oncologists were in the particular cancer that I had. And, you know, he found, Dr. Foss here at Yale and I think it made the world a difference. For me. And then being here at Yale, again, the survivorship classes, nutritionists, everything I was able to avail myself of was very, very helpful.
That's great. I'm wondering, in your experience in some of these support groups that you've done, likely you met some people who didn't do as well as you. Is that true or not so much?
No, it's true. And, you know, that's part of those, especially Bernie Siegel's group. I remember one guy I became friends with who passed away before I finished treatment, and he was a young guy, very successful, beautiful family, and it was really hard. I saw him in the ICU shortly before he passed. It was a very difficult thing to be a part of, but you know, you're a part of it. When you attend those meetings, you're right there with people on the edge of life, and that's a very special place to be. Again, like I said, it opens your eyes, but it's it can be very emotionally draining, and it really puts things in perspective when you look at somebody who is on that edge and who has such a great life and doesn't make it. And, you know, and oftentimes the spouses or, you know, usually the spouses, my brother came with me to several meetings, so you meet the families. And it's a hard thing to see, but you also want to be there for those people. That's part of your recovery, too.
Greg Walsh is a lymphoma survivor. We invite you to share your questions and comments, and you can send them to canceranswers@yale.edu, or you can leave a voicemail message at 888-234-4YCC. And as an additional resource, archived programs are available in both audio and written form at yalecancercenter.org. We'd like to thank the Yale Cancer Center for providing production support for this program, and we'd also like to thank Renee Gaudette, Emily Fenton, and the staff of the Yale Broadcast and Media Center. I'm Bruce Barber, hoping you'll join us again next Sunday evening at 6 for another edition of Yale Cancer Center Answers here on WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.